It's the Mayo News Football Podcast. I'm Rob Murphy. The Monaghan Preview Show has arrived. We've had such a busy week recording all sorts of audio for our members over on Patreon, following all the drama and, quite frankly, chaos at times in Markovic Park for a Mayo Donegal League game, which is pretty much the norm. Anyways, we could forget where we are, but you guys are back with us for the first time in a week, so we have loads to cover. We'll even have time to have a little bit of a chat about Kilmina. I'm sure we'll mention the Castlebar Ladies run to an All-Ireland final as well. There's a big preview of them coming up in a Patreon podcast. So much to look back on as well. Stephen Drake, how are you?
Rob, I'm great. Yeah, I'm better than I was the last couple of days. I was not alone at the weekend with a bunch of my mates. We go away every year and it was COVID affected the last few years. And I tell you, I was struggling yesterday now, I must say. But yeah, I'm ready to go now tonight. Looking forward to dissecting what went on at the weekend and everything that is coming towards us this weekend.
For the last, I'd say, about 18 years, had you said something like that on a podcast, there would be a Ballyhadrine GA coach going, oh no, this is not good. We need to have
this
work.
This is it, yeah. Yeah, and I don't care anymore. I have a new club, so I better not say it too. I don't think anyone in Gorey listens to this anyway, so it's fine. It's fine.
It's the Wexford News, but never mind. Anyways, Edwin, how are you?
I'm great, Rob. I think no more than a lot of the Mayo footballers on Sunday. I think Drakey was getting rid of a bit of dirty petrol at the weekend too.
Oh my God. That first half performance. I don't want to get straight into it, Edwin, but my God, they were rusty.
I hope they were rusty. I hope that's what it was. They were cat. They were as bad as I've seen in a long, long time, and it should have been game over. They were just. They had so few shots, even never mind scores. They really struggled to get into any sort of position. Old McLaughlin's free that led to Ryan O'Donoghue's point, debatable free. So that isn't given. They've only won 1 point in the first 35 minutes of the game. It was, you were thinking, God, is there going to be a change coming? And yeah, it was hard to see it at that stage, you know, but the Jekyll and Hyde of Mayo football going from one extreme to another presented itself again on Sunday.
I'm just looking at Sean Rice's brilliant column in the Mayo News this week, and he's saying it's not easy to understand what lurks in the recesses of minds in similar situations of adversity. And he's scratching his head like all of us, Stephen, at where does this come from in these Mayo teams? Why do they have to go to these depths to find some sort of rhythm? And it's usually rhythm that comes out of chaos, as Mike Finnerty said in the post-game podcast. Why is it that always brings out the best of Mayo?
I don't think anyone would ever question the attitude of these lads and the perseverance that they have shown, not just last weekend, I think in countless games prior to this. But, you know, they're putting themselves under ferocious pressure. And Ed is absolutely right. You know, the game really should have been over at halftime. Ed pointed to the Ryan's free off Owen McLaughlin's foul. And the other point we got was a 40, 50-yard run from Tommy Conroy, who beat three or four players and was fouled. So there was really, it was a bit of individual brilliance. There was no real method to it as such. They had two really, really good goal chances. The first one was a desperately poor finish by the Donegal attacker, and probably, you know, just as easy could have stepped and rolled into the back of the net. And the second one was a brilliant, brilliant save off a Murphy crossfield ball or crossfield shot that Robbie again got a hand to. And ultimately, I think without him at the weekend, you know, we could have been beaten out the gate, to be quite honest. But, you know, you have to give the guys credit for, you know, the second half performance and resilience and guts they showed. You know, the intensity levels were risen considerably in the second half. We got a lot more pressure on the ball. We didn't lay a glove on them in the first half, really. And I'm not, you know, and whether or not that was the game plan to sit and shepherd them outside the 45, but you know, even when ball went in, we were behind our men. We weren't getting contact on. So, it was worrying, I have to say. But the response in the second half was very, very strong. But in terms of the game plan and structure, it's difficult to see, you know, what we're doing differently. But again, you know, you'd have to reserve judgment, I think, until we look at the subsequent games. The conditions were desperate. You know, take that into account. But yeah, it wasn't pretty viewing for long periods. Yeah, absolutely.
Edwin, here's a perhaps too simplistic, but I thought it definitely rung true in my mind, overview of what was happening. Donegal holding on to possession, coming into the game that bit sharper off matches in the McKenna Cup. Mayo not really laying a glove, as Stephen said, on them, not making that contact. But Donegal perhaps then tiring themselves out in that 66% possession in the first half. And as they lost their way, Mayo came into it, made the contact, forced the turnovers. Does that sum it up?
Yeah, I'm not sure if they tired themselves out. That's the only part I'd question. I think mentally, the way they approached the second half, I think I'd be more critical of that than their physical, any physical concerns. I think what we saw in the first half is what Donegal and what a lot of Northern teams can do is, even when you have bodies back, they can be patient in possession. They're happy. They're not looking for first-time ball. They can play it around and play it around and wait for the opportunity. And it's something that Mayo have tried to improve on themselves. But it wasn't working for Mayo the last day. And you would have thought that the conditions that were in it, and it was really frustrating in the first half. You could see Donegal making mistakes. And they made a few mistakes where they had the guy who dropped the ball had time to pick it up. And before he even picked it up, he could look to see what he wanted to do with it. Mayo just weren't at the level where they were forcing turnovers, where they were biting at the heels of Donegal. They were very passive. And maybe that is rustiness. Maybe, you know, there's reasons we can't put our fingers on for that. But in the second half, that wasn't the case. Mayo were at the pitch of the game. So yeah, there was definitely a big swing in that regard, because it was a horrible day. And you're thinking, okay, put your man under pressure. It's going to be hard for them to keep the ball. But Donegal were able to play the ball around in the first half as if it was, you know, a dry game in the height of summer.
Stephen, I'm thinking of some of the players that probably at least didn't perform or were taken off. So you've got Fionn McDonagh, you got Conor Loftus, Conor O'Shea, you know, big debut from McHugh, didn't really go very well. And obviously Orm, some are saying he's had such a long season, not more. So all those players part of a selection process that didn't seem to fit what was needed, if you go by the way it finished.
Yeah, so some puzzling, I must say. Like McHugh at six, I was puzzled with. I thought it was a lot to put on a young guy's shoulders in his first game, I have to say. You know, I was very surprised, you know, not to see Stephen Cohen at six, given his experience. And the other side of things, you know, I don't think he's a fullback as such. I don't think he's comfortable there, to be quite honest. Aidan Orm, look, you have to give Aidan the benefit of the doubt. I thought it was a little bit unfair to play him after, you know, the season he had, the amount of games he had. So, you know, I probably would have held him back. You know, midfield was well beaten. That's the reality. Now, it's not just down to the two guys. And, you know, we pointed to the fact that we didn't get hands on in the middle third in the first half. And I think we were, caught between two minds in a sense. You know, I think it looked that we were each guy was tracking men. But Donegal, you know, the way Donegal moved the angles, you know, that's shifting players over and back, and that's creating openings then for them to drive through. I think if Mayo had sat at a fairly rigid zonal structure in the first half and actually, you know, hit the guy that was in their area as opposed to trying to follow guys across the pitch and over and back, that probably would have worked a bit better. But some of the lads, it didn't go for them. Fionn had a ball early on after about 3 or 4 minutes where he kicked a crossfield pass that dropped short and Donegal attacked up the field. I think Michael Murphy's mark came off it, if I'm not mistaken, that he kicked the free off. And he looked devoid of confidence after that, I have to say. I think it really, really affected him early on. And I don't think he got himself back into the game after that. And he looked really tentative. But, you know, look, they're all young guys, and they, you'd hope they'd learn from that, and they'll come back stronger, I have no doubt. But yeah, like, you know, for some, and look, it wasn't just them, you know, some of our most experienced guys probably underperformed as well. We didn't have a lot of guys who were, you know, at their level. You know, Robbie, obviously, Paddy Durkin had a fine game, and Doc, what unbelievable, you know, to come back and to perform at the level he did, was really encouraging. And also, you know, and I was delighted to see it, Brendan Harrison, you know, he looked really, really sharp, which was great. And if he can continue that and get back to the form he had, you know, back in 17, he would be a huge, huge boost for us in the full back line.
I felt really sorry for the debutants the last day, or the likes of Fionn McDonagh coming back, because such a day to start, and you won't get too many shots in a league campaign, and your first game is on a miserable day in Sligo. And if you're the type of footballer that Aidan Orm is, and you're looking to spray the ball around, play heads-up football, it's not, and certainly the way Mayo were playing in that first half, it's not conducive to it. He arguably could have played a lot better in the second half when Mayo were playing better. But when so many players are playing poorly, and like you're wondering at halftime who was going to be taken off. Like, it was more so getting players on, particularly in the case of Aidan O'Shea. And I think Aidan Orm and Fionn McDonagh, you know, they probably can't have too many complaints, but there could have been half a dozen other guys who could just have easily have been yanked at halftime. That's how bad Mayo were. And you just hope it doesn't kind of set them back. Because I think all the players we've mentioned there, I think they all have something to offer, be it this year or in the years to come. But I don't think it was a day for trying a whole pile in terms of new players. You know, maybe some guys can really put their hands up on a dirty dog of a day like that and show that they have the hunger for it. But, you know, if you're trying to get your first touch, you're trying to, you know, just ease your way into the game as a debutant, it wasn't a day for that.
Edwin, just before we go through a few specifics I want to talk to you about, as we record this, we've got word that Tommy Conroy has had to at least go to hospital with an injury, a leg injury. Beyond that, our information is sketchy. By the time our listeners hear this, we'll have more. But there's that concern now hanging over Mayo football, along with, you know, how long before Killian's back, and Oisin Mullen. A lot of people hopeful that he might be back next week, but Mike was saying on the podcast on Patreon, straight after the game, that it's going to be 2 to 3 weeks is what he's hearing, maybe more.
Yeah, and again, like, by the time this podcast airs, we might have more clarity and it mightn't be as bad, but you're here in hospital and you're trying to second guess what the nature of the injury might be, but we're operating in a vacuum. You're just hoping that it's precautionary. You're hoping that he's obviously in pain. You're hoping it's one of those injuries that can be quite painful but not as serious as first feared, because like the second half, the last day, I thought he was immense. I thought Drakey mentioned his run for the point in the first half. It was one of those feck it runs, nothing else is on, I'm just going to have to do this myself, and he was so good in the second half. And Ian Clark from Ardenry posed the question on Twitter, like, where do you play him? Arguably at 13 with his back to goal is not the place you want him. You nearly need him running from the half forward line, but you don't want him too deep either. But when he is facing the goal, running at players, like the run he made to set up Jason Doherty's point, and the hand pass at the end of that was just incredible. And then his run for the Brian Walsh goal chance was absolutely incredible. And just the hand pass was just a little bit behind, and Brian Walsh had to check his run, and then it was a bad miss going for the point. But Tommy Conroy just looked sensational at stages. And on a day when it wasn't a day for him, like, you know, but he made it work. And that's why, yeah, you hope it's not serious, because he'd be a huge, huge loss.
Yeah, it's funny, Stephen. I came away from the game more excited by Tommy Conroy's performance than anything else, actually, even though he wasn't man of the match and he had a quiet first half. But it was just seeing those little nuggets that just made me feel like, my God, the quality of this young lad.
Yeah, super. He's a superstar, Rob. He really is, like, you know, and I've said it many times, like, you know, the excitement I have, you know, at a potential forward line of himself and Killian and Ryan, we've never had that electricity together inside as a team for any period I can remember in terms of Mayo. So, absolutely right. Second half, the last day, just outstanding. What I love about him is he's just prepared to take a game by the scruff of the neck and go at it. And Ed pointed to that feckin' run in the first half. You know, nothing else presenting itself in front of him, and he just put the head down, the shoulder down, brave and taking on guys. And look, it would just, you know, look, I hope to God that, as Ed said, you know, this is precautionary and it's something that isn't too serious. And hopefully the news is reasonably positive when we find out more. But it would be a savage loss. There's no point in painting it in any other way. He is a superstar. And, you know, I was looking forward, you know, and still looking forward to hopefully seeing you know, continued improvement in him this year as well.
Edwin, just some of the other topics we wanted to quickly touch on before we start looking ahead to Monaghan, where, as we said, we want to chat a bit about Kilmina towards the end of this podcast. But Dermot O'Connor's fight and fire in that second half and his energy and his drive just seemed to be that little step ahead of anything we've seen from him in the winter in the last few years. Everyone is really, really hopeful that there's a kind of a re-spark of his very, very best form this season. And some good signs, would you suggest?
I thought for the first 30 minutes he was one of the guys who could be possibly taken off. I thought he was anonymous, but then he provided the assist for Owen McLaughlin's point. He won the break, I think, from that kick out. And in the second half, I thought he was really, really impressive. He really got stuck in. He threw his body around. He had that great run down the left sideline and a great pickup for an assist for Jason Doherty. And there's a lot of criticism sometimes about German not scoring enough. And, you know, some of that, like a lot of that might be fair, but he is a creative player too. Like, you know, he can, he does make things happen. Like Tommy Conroy didn't score the last day, you know, but again, he made a lot happen. And I thought Jerma did too. And it was him that helped force the turnover at the end for the equaliser. I think him and Jordan Flynn turned over Michael Murphy at a crucial stage. That led to a point when Mayo were on the run, on the comeback. And I felt he really rolled up his sleeves and got stuck in. And it was a day for that. You know, you weren't going to get a massive amount of finesse, even though his scoop pickup off the ground was class. But he really did get stuck in.
Yeah, he's at times, I have to say, like, Dermot infuriates me a little bit, because I like, you know what he's capable of. And, you know, I think at times Dermot nearly needs to get tick or angry. And then we really see the best of him. You know, I think, you know, in certain instances, in certain games, he can be lethargic is the wrong word, but, you know, he risk averse, I possibly would say. I love the situations where, you know, Mayo are in difficulty and they need someone to drag them out of the mire. And, you know, he gets the bull by the horns and drives a game on. I just want to see him do more of it, you know, because he has that great capability. I love seeing him, you know, when, you know, again, fantastic in the tackle, driving into fellas, turning ball over, you know, when he gets on the carrying ball 40, 50 yards directly at the opposition. You know, I'd love to see that all the time from him, because it's in there and the quality is there. But I just feel at times, you know, he just needs to get that bit angry, or, you know, we only tend to see it when we're really up against it. But yeah, look, the second half, he was immense again, as usual. And that's what you expect from your leaders. But, you know, look, I think Dermot probably himself would have been frustrated over the last couple of years and not getting to the level he previously had. But hopefully that's a really good catalyst for him to drive on now next weekend and again on the games following. But yeah, look, encouraging signs from his perspective.
Another player I want to talk about, and Edwin, you come in off the back of Stephen on this, but O'McLaughlin, like with Oisin Mullen and Enda Hesham waiting in the wings and Lee Keegan, who everyone wants to see brought out of that full back line. You know, a lot of people have had McLaughlin nailed down as a starter based on 2020, sorry, and maybe even 2021 in parts. But then you're looking for that development in terms of footballing skills, and you see him carry the ball under his shoulder and go 10 steps and give a free away or change hands in possession on another occasion, one or two loose kick passes or even one or two sloppy fouls. So a lot of criticism there, Stephen. But, you know, this is a player with a massive engine. He looks like Paddy Durkin going forward when he's in the mood, but he's not bringing much more. And then you start to wonder if an Enda Hesham gets ahead of him or someone else.
Yeah, well, you see, like, there you go. It's the, like, the raw material is spectacular. You know, he's a phenomenal athlete. He's quick. He's strong. You know, he can do excellent things at times. The thing for me, Rob, with Owen, and the biggest worry I'd have as opposed to the skill level, because, you know, the skill level can take time to develop in players and can take a little longer than most things, really. And again, like, talking back to the last day, conditions were diabolical. I'd look at the things, you know, again, the free we got in the first half. He actually popped a nice ball into Doc, Jason Doherty there, and took a return. He was fouled and he got a shot off after that. So, like, he does have it in the locker. He needs to sort of tighten up those elements, and that will come with more time. The stuff that I worry about that shouldn't be happening really is the decision-making piece. You know, like 3 or 4 years down the line at senior inter-county level, you know, stuff like the late hit on Murphy in the second half when he was stuck to the sideline and they weren't getting out, basically. And Murphy drove a ball 60 yards up the line and Owen went through him straight after that. And Tony Gall got a free up then on our 45-yard line. That's schoolboy stuff. And that's unforgivable at that level, especially when you're operating there for the last 3 years. And again, other decision-making things in relation to his tackling, the stuff in terms of the, you know, getting in the ref's ear as well. You know, that's silly stuff. So from my perspective, like, the skill level, I think, you know, will come, and, you know, that's probably a slower process. And I do, like, you know, notwithstanding last weekend and one or two instances in desperate conditions, like, I have been seeing some encouraging signs in terms of his ball skills and ball handling. But I'd be really concerned in relation to the decision making and cutting out those really silly errors. And you're absolutely right, you know, like, Enda Hesham will be absolutely breathing down his neck, I would say, because, again, Enda, I think, probably better decision-making and a better footballer, possibly not the athlete Owen is, but again, Enda Hesham is still, you know, he's still a fairly impressive athlete. So I think, you know, he'll need to tighten up those few things. If not, he will come under pressure without question.
Yeah, I think sometimes when Owen is in possession of the ball, you're kind of thinking, just give it off. You're just a little bit worried that he might make the wrong decision. And that obviously shouldn't be the case. Like, we saw a couple of times the last day, his pace is just, like, he started one run 5 yards behind his man. And in about the space of 20 yards, he'd made that ground up. And I have a feeling it was Ryan McHugh he was chasing. Like, so, you know, you weren't talking about a slouch. But, like, if you look at the options in defence, like, I'm just jotting them down here in no particular order. If everyone's available, you've Paddy Durkin, Lee Keegan, Oisin Mullen, Páirc Ó-Thóra, Stephen Cohen, Brendan Harrison, Owen McLaughlin, Enda Hesham. And that's before, you know, you talk about guys like, obviously, James Horan saw Duncan McHugh, he saw something in him, he sees something in Sam Callanan. But you've eight guys there fighting for 6 places. Now, maybe there's an argument for one of them moving forward, be it to midfield or be it to the half-forward line. But I certainly don't think, you know, there can be too many nailed-on places in that defence, like, you know, which is great. But I do think Owen brings a lot to particularly Croke Park. But at times, yeah, just I couldn't agree more with Drakey. The decision-making just too often lets him down. And that's kind of where you're hoping the improvement can still come.
Want even more Mayo Football podcasts? Become a member of our Patreon club to get bonus pods, join our Discord chat group, and ask us anything about Mayo football. All for just €5 a month plus VAT. Go to patreon.com/Mayo Podcast.
Here's McBrearty.
Saved by Robbie Henley. Still a glimmer of hope, John, but Mayo down to 14.
They'll tell us behind him if he's got it.
Yes, yes.
It's going. He's nailed it. He has nailed it. Robbie Henley. What a score.
Tiptoeing around some of the other talking points because, you know, Billy Chopin writes really well this week about lots of different elements of the performance and has some interesting stuff around Aidan O'Shea as well. Always want to listen to Billy Chopin talk about where Aidan O'Shea should be played. You know, so many people have an opinion on that. We've talked about it so many different times. So, you know, if you want to talk a bit more about that, lads, do. But the other thing was, Edwin, myself and yourself had a long discussion about Robbie Henley, but we realised this, we've talked about this to death, and we'll get another chance to dissect Robbie Henley under high balls, his kickouts, his shot-stopping ability as the season progresses. We can just chalk that down to a man in a match, I think, and take a breath on it, everyone, and stop thinking about All-Ireland finals right now and start thinking about the fact he's clearly Mayo's best goalkeeper, clearly Mayo's best option. That's what I feel, but feel free to jump in there, lads. Stephen, go for it.
Like, this needs to stop, I would say. You know, let's that and this constant rhetoric certainly isn't good. Like, this stuff gets back to players as well. You know, players will, you know, oh, we don't listen to the media, blah blah blah. You know, that's, you know, that manifests itself in many other ways. Robbie Henley, by a distance, is the best goalkeeper in Mayo. So we can talk all we want about performance levels and whatnot. It's the most exposed position on the pitch. Right, the best goalkeepers in the world, at any level, be it soccer, be it Gaelic football, whatever, they make mistakes. They make mistakes. If you're in high pressure situations continuously, like Mayo have been in huge games more often than not over the last 10 years, you know, these mistakes are more magnified than if you're playing for God knows whoever down the country in a game that has been watched by, you know, a couple of hundred people or 1,000 people or so. So Robbie Henley is Mayo's best goalkeeper by a distance. And the we ultimately need to get behind the lad and accept the fact that, you know, he's our best option. He's an excellent keeper. You know, he's not, you know, the top one or two in Ireland, but he's certainly up there. I think personally he's the best goalkeeper in Connacht by a long way. He's had some marvellous games for us over the years. He's got us out of, you know, huge situations more, you know, so often as well. And last weekend he had a fine game, 3 outstanding saves, kicked the equalising score, couple of iffy kickouts, horrible conditions. That's going to happen. I'd love it to move on ultimately, and let's get behind the lad, because in terms of other options, we have nothing close.
Yeah, I'd agree. And I would, that's something I'd often say, is that over the last decade, that Galway, Roscommon, etc. would love to have had the decision over, oh, do you start David Clark or Robbie Henley? Like, we were blessed with two really, really good goalkeepers. And I think part of the problem is people have an unrealistic expectation of what goalkeepers should do. David Clark is the most commanding goalkeeper in around the square that I've ever seen. And from playing the position, not very well for 20 odd years, what he was able to do under high ball was incredible. And people think that Rob Henley should be able to do exactly the same thing. And they have this old fashioned view that any ball around the square should be the goalkeeper's. In theory, yes. But like, the reality is, you're Robbie Henley, you're jumping with another player, like no more than jumping for a kick out the field. You might win it. He might win it. It might break. It might go into the net. It might go wide. It might go over. You know, so I think you have to kind of judge each individual moment. Maybe, like, go back to the All-Ireland final. The first goal that Tyrone got, he should have stayed on his line. There was that little bit of indecision there. Absolutely. The two high balls last day, people were wondering about them. I thought he did quite well on them. He limited what the opposition player could do. He knocked one down and he restricted the access to the goal for the other one. So, yeah, I just think sometimes people are looking at it the wrong way. And again, it's a specialised position, and people were saying, for instance, you know, that he made two really, really good saves in the first half, the last day. I agree with Drakey. The first save wasn't Anton special. He stood up and the ball was hit straight at him. The second save, it was a good save. I would say, and this is a metric I'd always use a judgment I'd always use, if it went in, would he be blamed for it or would he have been unhappy with it? And I think he would. So therefore, it's a save almost that he'd expect to make. I thought the penalty save was better because it was a really tricky trajectory, low to the ground. He wasn't at full stretch. He had to get his hands down underneath him. And yeah, like David Clark obviously was so commanding, but you know, the kickouts weren't an issue there. And Robbie's kickouts are, they're very, very good. They weren't perfect the last day. They never will be perfect every day, but I think his kickout and his ability to score from long range is a considerable weapon. And I just wish we would focus on the reality that David Clark is retired, that the best goalkeeper we have available in Connacht is Rob Henley, and, you know, just move on. He will make mistakes. Goalkeepers do. Rory Began will make mistakes. You know, Evan Comerford will make mistakes. All the goalkeepers, Niall Morgan will make mistakes. But, you know, you just have to look at his...
Niall Morgan, indeed. I was behind the goal for the second half and the extra time half in the All-Ireland semi-final against Kerry, and he had some moments, let me tell you, in that game. And yet, we all know that he almost single-handedly, that would be very unfair on Tyrone, but he certainly was a crucial factor in them beating Mayo in the All-Ireland final. So, ups and downs of the goalkeeping position. Let's take a breath. Right, to finish our review and to kind of move towards Monaghan, because it is the Monaghan preview show. Speaking of goalies, Edwin, Rory Began was chasing up the field, kicking points with play. So we'll have to have a marker for him the next day. Here's a technical question. Are people forgetting, and correct me if I'm wrong, you can't pass back to the keeper on a kick out. Is there a better way to play that? Like, I don't think teams are playing the first receiver very well by forgetting that, well, the goalkeeper isn't an option. So can they kind of shepherd him towards that goalkeeper, if you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of teams have adapted very well defensively to, you know, making sure that the first pass after the kick out is to an outfield player and then the goalkeeper is back in play. But the last day, actually, I thought Mayo let Donegal away with far too many short kickouts. I think that was a problem. But the thing has evolved so much. And, you know, like Rory Began scoring a point the last day, it was nearly unremarkable, but because of how things have developed, and Niall Morgan did it, I think, a couple of years ago. But it's amazing. And it's also amazing that it has taken so long for it to happen. But I think a lot of it goes down to the black card rule where, you know, if the goalie was trying it before the black card rule came in, he'd be just body checked and there'd be nothing said about it because there was no sympathy for goalkeepers trying to get outside their area. And I think Mayo got a bit of joy from the last free at the minute, at the end. I think it was a free, but I think the fact that it was a goalkeeper going to ground far from home, I think the referee just said, not giving you the free out here, you know. So it's interesting how it has all evolved. But
one point on that, Edwin, just because I think I had a really good angle on it live, he did try and grab the arm as he went down as well. And I think the referee had the same angle. Whether he did that or not, I don't know. But it was one of those, I'm going down, going to bring you with me. And I'd say that really influenced the referee's decision because it was pretty milliseconds after he hit the ground that the whistle blew. So I think there was a bit of that to it. Anyways, you can argue that's the end of the world. Patton shouldn't have been caught in possession. I couldn't believe they didn't go long on that kick out. What were they thinking?
I felt sorry for him. Ridiculous pass by Ryan McHugh.
And they put themselves in so many situations like that in the last 10 minutes. Like, you know, I understand that, again, the premium possession now, you know, teams don't want to, you know, turnover ball because, look, majority of scores are coming off turnover ball. But, like, in situations like that, I was saying, listen, you put that ball 70, 80 yards up the field. They had two or three chances in that play to drive the ball 70, 80 yards. And you can then just put a press on up the field and foul 80, 90 yards from goal. Like, you can drag fellas down up there. And it's a lot more difficult to work the ball, you know, 100 yards up the field, you know, in the last minute and try and get a score off when they're trying to foul you and trying to be cynical. So it was silly on their part. They got what they deserved ultimately, you know.
Lads, what's Clonus going to be like? Edwin first. It's like McManus seems to be back firing last minute points. You know, there's probably going to be the full hammer and tongs effort from Monaghan. It's a tough one for Mayo.
Yeah, and I was very impressed by Monaghan, and that's why I thought Mayo had such a good chance. Very impressed by Monaghan against Donegal in the McKenna Cup final. They really restricted what Donegal could do. I think for three quarters of the game, I think they'd, you know, scored very little from play. Donegal scored very little from play. I thought Monaghan's defending was really, really good. It always has been, but I just thought their tackling was really good, and it's cliche to credit that with Tony Buckley. I think he had a good head start before he went working with them. But that was very noticeable the last day, and in the McKenna Cup final, and I thought they took the scores at the other end of a few very capable scorers from different ranges. I think it'll be a step up from Donegal, from what Donegal brought the last day. Therefore, like, I don't think the first half will cut it. We'll cut it the next day. But it's just like, it's going to be such a competitive division that you feel the point the last day wasn't just a point for Mayo, but it was a point less for Donegal. And that could be so important at the end of the competition. And the same the next day, you know, would you take a draw now? I would, because I think every single point is going to be so crucial.
Stephen, I mean, it's just going to be a slog, I'd say. Aidan O'Shea right in the middle of that field is surely a must to have a shot in this one.
Yeah, I think so. I think, look, we need his physicality. We'll need it more the next day, because this is a very, very physical team. You know, they didn't give Tyrone much breathing space at all last weekend. Ed touched a great point. You know, they were very, very strong on the tackle, I thought. They've always been very, very strong on the tackle. They look even more aggressive in the tackle now. You know, double, triple teaming at times when they got the opportunity. Very disciplined, you know. Look, they have a good team, Rob. You know, and they're on the go a long time. Like, they were only just beaten in an Ulster final last year. They've got Conor McManus, arguably the best forward in the country on his day. Other really good guys like Jack McCarron, I think, has developed over the last year or two. He took on a lot of responsibility last year.
Want even more Mayo football podcasts? Become a member of our Patreon club to get bonus pods, join our Discord chat group, and ask us anything about Mayo football. All for just €5 a month plus VAT.
Massively difficult.
Go to patreon.com/Mayo
We'll need him in there to break up play. We'll need him in there to carry ball. He'll be less exposed up there, especially if the weather's poor again. I don't see, you know, any situation we can go without him next weekend. So I'd expect him to start the game. But yeah, it's going to be a very, very tough game. And if we come out of there with a point next weekend, I'd bite your hand off. I really would, because it will be a dogfight.
We can talk a bit more about Monaghan on our Here Comes the Weekend section on Patreon, where we'll be delving into maybe some of the self-belief that must be in the county, or some of the hope that must be in the county after, you know, the way the All-Ireland played out last year, or maybe some of the frustration too, because mother God, you lose to Tyrone by a point, then you look at what Tyrone go and do. Like, Monaghan fans probably believe it's more possible than ever to maybe go and win an All-Ireland at this point of the year. But that's for, again, I just want to finish our Mayo chat as we get ready to chat a little bit. Kilmina, we'll be coming back to this game again before the podcast is over. We have it for any other business, or as we call a smoking section of the podcast to come as well. But Edwin, Jason Doherty, like, you know, maybe it's because I've hit the big 4-0 that I wonder, 32 seems so young to me, and yet, you know, loads of people have been telling me, oh, it's going to be really hard for him, and then I watch him the last day in January easing into a game. At one stage, he was down on the ground over in the sideline on the far side. And honest to God, I think he was having his Jerry Maguire moment where he was just soaking it all in and he just got himself back up. He was loving it. That's a brilliant sign. And that's a huge addition if that guy can keep it going.
Yeah. And again, no more than so many more in the first half. You're like, I'm not sure. Is he at the pace? And it would have been very understandable. The 3 points he kicked in the second half, like, he, there was nothing simple about any of them. And I know the last one, it was definitely a goal chance. But from where he got the ball, he had a good bit of work to do to create that opportunity. And he did it so well. And again, you think, God, like, Mayo were missing him since the Donegal game in 2019. And that just seemed like so long ago. And two cruciates in your early 30s and to be back at all is incredible. And I don't think anyone had any high expectations of him. They were just delighted to see him back, and then to see him leaving with 3 points and playing so well, particularly in the second half, you were starting to think, hold on a second, no, this is a serious addition to the forward line. The sentimentality went to one side and you're thinking, wow, this is going to make our team much, much stronger. because again, you didn't have that expectation. You had to see what he could do. So that's it's a major, major positive for Mayo.
Yeah, it's huge. It's absolutely huge, and it's great to see. I saw a photo. I'm not sure what I saw. I'm not sure what paper I saw it on, or I could have seen it online. And I think it was coming off after the game, and I was looking at his legs, and I'm not in a romantic way by any stretch, but in the sense, I you know, a lot of guys who come back after serious injuries or cruciates like that, you can see a certain amount of muscle wastage, and you can sort of see where, you know, if the definition is gone or if they've been able to build themselves back up. But like, you know, he looked in phenomenal shape, you know, and is like the legs look strong, physical. You know, and he looked like he was just ready to go. And that's hugely encouraging because we need him, you know, and I liked him in full forward. He seemed to play at the point at times, just in front of the two guys. And that great ability he has to make runs to the side and offer that outlet ball. 3 points he got were just a touch of class, which we all know he has. So, look, you know, it would be remarkable if he can get straight back up to the level that he was previously, because, you know, people who've had cruciates often struggle in the year after to regain their best form, or can struggle with little niggling injuries. But he looks in really, really good shape. And again, if he can continue that, it's a huge, huge bonus for us, and adds just another level of firepower to an already exciting forward line.
All right, we will circle back just before the end of this podcast. Just one question for you is going to be the cheat sheet for all our listeners to watch out for certain elements of Mayo's play that might be signs that they're doing things differently. So I'll get you guys to think about that. In the meantime, if you want to sign up to us on Patreon, you've heard the ads. So much more podcast audio there, including this week on Sunday night. Mike Finnerty sat down for half an hour with Stephen Rochford after all that drama. It's a brilliant podcast. It's sitting there waiting for you to listen to it. And here's just a little snippet.
Why would you say you went back to Donegal again this year? What was the biggest motivation for you for year four?
First reason I went back is because they asked me. Nobody else did. Look, I suppose motivation. You know, they're firstly, you know, they're a really, you know, fabulous group to work with. Really great personalities, really good footballers. Continues to be a lot of good potential there. Great potential. In fairness, an element of maybe unfinished business, you know, it's sort of the November 2020 to July 2021, you know, I think we never got to a rhythm that I sort would say that I was comfortable with. Would be reasonably happy how the last 10 weeks, or so have gone. Guys getting back into the gym. There's been a good camaraderie being built up. There's good spirit in the camp. And you know, I enjoy working with them, and it's at a level that you know, we're quite competitive with a group that are hungry to you know, get more out of them. And you know, it's a challenge. You know, working at that level, you know, people are going to benchmark you off, you know, the Tyrones, the Monans, the Mayos, the Kerrys, the Dublins, and you know, that's if you're going to be involved in coaching or management, really that yardstick is you know, it's a great measure. So you know, that I suppose is the reasons why you go back up there.
From the voice of Stephen Rochford to the voice of Darragh Keaveney, goal scorer for Kilmina in the All-Ireland semi-final, and looking ahead to the All-Ireland football final with the Mayo News' Oisín McGovern.
So we're here now in the upstairs of the Kilmina GAA Clubhouse, just here right on the west coast of Ireland, for the club's press night, and I'm joined here by one of the stars of the Kilmina junior team, ready to play in Ireland in a couple of days' time, Darragh Keaveney. So, Darragh, first of all, how did it all start for you back here with Kilmina GAA Club?
Yeah, it started off as a 16-year-old. I remember the junior team at the time, they were struggling for numbers. And I remember one day, distinctly, it was Liam Heaney who called us out and he said, can you come and play a match up in Mayo Abbey? And from then on, that's when it started for myself. And I suppose ever since, I've enjoyed it. I suppose, yeah, that's really how it started. And I know, that's when I really enjoyed it, and that's where he started. Yeah.
Yeah, and can you describe what it was playing? Well, can you describe what it was like playing for the club then at underage? Did you win much? Were you victorious? How does it compare with the season that has just gone, where you've obviously lifted two trophies already?
Yeah, like I suppose my underage, like I didn't win any trophy. Like this year, the junior title was my first major trophy with the club. But for the guys like Sean Ryder and John Ryan and these guys, they were captain of teams that won West Mayo titles and county titles as well. Those guys had obviously experienced underage success at minor level and that. But yeah, for myself, no, I didn't win much now with underage. So yeah, winning the junior title this year was the major one. But yeah, underage, there wasn't much. Until that current crop of kind of from Sean Ryder down, they were the next crop then to come in, and that's what obviously today has led to our junior team.
And your father was chairman of the club here for a couple of years ago. So how big of a factor has the work that has gone here behind the scenes in developing your facilities and training the teams, how big of a factor has that been in the club being where it is today?
Oh, it's massive. Like, I mean, back in 2012 we only had just our main pitch out here, and today we have, you know, our second pitch down below. We have just across the way we have our gym, and we have our rec room and our dressing rooms as well. You know, there's been a lot of developments, but it hasn't been just facility wise, it's been also coaching wise as well. You know, we got obviously a lot of coaching workshops in, and to help kind of, I suppose, develop coaches. And and then obviously our underage structure, just kind of getting people in and developing them is the main thing as well with them. And yeah, I suppose the last few years we've got players as well, like myself. I was coaching with underage as well, under 16s, and Sean Ryder with the minors as well 2 years ago. So we're all obviously in as well to try and, I suppose, give a bit of inspiration, if you like, to those guys to come in and want to play for the senior team, and that's what we want as well, for those guys to come in. So yeah.
And obviously you're not exactly a new kid on the block. Certainly the likes of Neil Woolley Ryan has been there for a good few years. So why do you think this year above any other you've gone as far as you've gotten in the junior Mayo Championship and then on towards Connacht for the All-Ireland Series? Why this year above any others?
Yeah, I suppose last year losing the final to the main, that was, I suppose, we came away from there and we said, you know what, there's something there in this team. Like, we know that we can go one step further. And like this year, like, look, it was a rocky road to the final, but and particularly the final itself. But you know, it was all kind of coming together right. You know, we knew, I suppose, after the semi-final that we were going in with confidence compared to maybe last year's final. It was our first final in, I think, 18 years. You know, 2003 was the last final we ever contested before that. And then, you know, for us, we were going into this final this year with a lot of confidence. So, like, look, you know, there was no difference really. Like, it was we were just, you know, really looking forward to it, and that's what, I suppose, helped us really.
Just looking out the window of the clubhouse here, the sky is obviously pure black. In exactly a week's time we could see bonfires blazing out that window there. So what's the atmosphere like among the group at the minute, given that you've only a week to play in the Northern Ireland final?
Yeah, like, I suppose you don't have much time to think about it, you know. I suppose previous, you know, you've had the run-ins, you know, you might have a 2-3 week gap, like, to a final, and I suppose that can be a killer, you know, you're kind of waiting around, and you know, but for us, like, we're just, you know, kind of recovering really, and back training again, and yeah, like, look, we know ourselves that we don't want to let the occasion get to us. You know, we want to go into Crow Park, you know, we want to enjoy it, but we want to win. You know, that's the main thing we're going up for. And we know, look, the challenge that we're meeting is going to be a tough one, but it's one that, you know, we want to enjoy. And as you said, you know, you'd love to be coming back with bonfires, and the support that we've been getting, you know, has been fantastic. You know, support is phenomenal, not just at home but abroad as well. You know, that's what's really been motivating us. And but it's all great thinking about these bonfires, and that, you know, you have to go to win first. You know, that's the main thing.
Derek, keep me listening. All the best in the All-Ireland final.
Cheers. Thanks a million.
Lads, we've got to give them some time because they're such an amazing story. A junior club outside Westport with hearts beyond belief, with young players coming through at an outrageous level for a rural club. Lots of hope that we'll be talking about these guys possibly as a senior club in a few years' time. First things first, though, Crow Park. What a big day, Stephen, for them.
Huge. Yeah, absolutely huge. And deserved. They've been the best team in Mayo, obviously, this year. You know, they negotiated a difficult county final in difficult conditions. But the performance this after that in Connacht and last weekend have been absolutely outstanding. And you made a nice point there, Rob. This is obviously a massive game for them at the weekend. It's huge for the area, it's huge for the club. But I think this is just the start for this team. I think it's a stepping stone. I expect to see them senior in the next 2 or 3 years. And I expect, and look, if they can continue producing this type of player with the age profile they have, I think it's a team that can challenge at the latter end of the senior championship in the next few years. I really believe that. I believe there's a touch of class there. They seem to have a great management team in place. And this is the starting point, I think, of something huge for them. And they're going to be very, very difficult to beat. But they do have to beat, you know, the big thing for any junior team at this level is to go up against the Kerry champions. They've dominated this competition basically since its inception. I think they're 5 of the last 6 winners. And Niamh Gula will pose a serious threat. And the biggest thing, the thing about this is, I was in college at Kerry for a couple of years, and I sort of experienced a bit of club football down there. These teams in the junior championship operate at a different level. You know, when they're playing in the East Kerry championship, they're playing against senior teams. They're operating at a higher level all the time. And that's why these teams tend to be so difficult to beat. But I think Kilmeena are operating at a different level than any other sort of Mayo team that's come at this stage. And I really think this is a very strong intermediate team. Really, if you're putting them at their level, you know, Kilmeena are probably a last 4 intermediate team in Mayo. So listen, this will be their toughest test, I think. But they're well set to give it a ferocious battle. And I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to try and get into it at the weekend and try and soak it up a small bit and shout them on. And I think we're all behind them as well.
Got to see them in free flow on Longford GA TV. We had a look at that. But Edwin, they were just miles ahead in that semi-final.
Yeah, they absolutely blew the Offaly team, Clune Bulldog, away. I think in the first 20 minutes, they were out of sight. I was listening in on Midwest, and the second half was just a procession, you know. It was game over long before halftime. And when you consider, like, their opponents had to navigate all of Leinster, and they did that to them, it does. Drake is right. The Kerry champions are always going to be favourites for these games because of the nature of their championship, how it's configured down there, because, you know, the divisional teams, you know, their best players get exposure to the senior championship as well. They have a lot going in their favour, but Kilmeena they've just laid waste to everyone since the county final. And I think the more we think about it, or the more we've seen of them since, Kilcommon's performance in the county final was remarkable. To be as competitive as they were, that game was still in the mix with 5 minutes to go. But Kilmeena, we would have played them, you know, at underage and at junior level coming up through, and plenty of battles. But they were always a club who carried themselves very well. I once left Kilmeena's pitch in an ambulance after hitting my head off the goalpost, and lived to tell the tale. There's still a scar in the middle of my forehead from it. But even then, like they just couldn't do enough for you. You know, they're that type of they're that type of group. They're that type of club, and they've some great club people. Like you see a club in an All-Ireland final, and I'm always drawn to think about the people that have been on the road for a long time with that club and how much they'll be enjoying it. Like, and I'm just thinking the likes of Willie Kelly, Michael Gavin, all the Rhines, you know, the joy that they'll get from watching this after having soldiered for so long. And, you know, they're just, it's such a great occasion for the club to play at Croke Park, to play in Croke Park. But Kilmeena will feel, they were there in 2003, not in Croke Park, but in an All-Ireland final, and they lost an Obber of Meath. They'll feel that they're not going up there to soak in the surroundings. Like, they feel that they can win this, and they've every reason to feel it, you know, and yeah, fingers crossed they will.
I hope, and I feel anyways, that when you have moments like that in 2003, it kind of becomes etched in your DNA, and they're not just the new kids on the block now. That's deep in their roots. A lot of those lads will have been young kids watching that. Some of them won't remember it, of course. But listen, it's going to be great. Best of luck to everyone involved. We're really looking forward to it at the weekend. Edwin, it's ridiculous, but the first thing that came into my head there was it a goal or a point? Did you make a save before you hit your head, or what happened?
Well, just to show how decent they are, it was Danny Ryan, who I lived with in college, actually, was coming in from at an angle to fist the ball over the bar. And I went to jump to try and block it. And his considerable heft knocked my considerable heft back the way, and I hit my head off the post, and the ball came off the crossbar and went down into the square. And Davy Feehan, instead of pulling on it, roared at the ref, "Stop the game, stop the game, stop the game." The umpire at the other end, the brave umpire at the other end, told me that he heard the hollow noise of the goalpost and knew things were fairly bad. And I didn't think I was that bad at all, but seemingly all the blood was flowing back into my hair, so I couldn't feel it. But yeah, I ended up being brought by ambulance to Mayo Hospital, and or Mayo General as it was at the time. And the doctor on duty looking at me and saying, "Oh, I can see your skull." So that was very reassuring to hear as soon as you arrive. But yeah, there you go. That was 2007. It's a long time ago now, but it's forever etched in my mind and on my head.
Who did you say was a Fian? He learned from Paolo Di Canio there by showing great sportsmanship in an amazing moment. I seem to remember an old clip from Paolo Di Canio. Stephen Drake, do you have any injury stories before we finish this week's podcast?
So how long do you have? Yeah, to be quite honest, I came from the chiropractor today. I was at the chiropractor earlier today, so I have a bulging disc in C5, C6. So yeah, if we recorded this earlier today, now my shoulder was up here, you know, it was up towards my ear, but no, he did a really good job in me. Yeah, but no, lots of injury stories. One or two that involved brawls and fights, but we won't go into that. Yeah, I think the only time I had bloodshed.
Are we going back to the Kilmaine relegation playoff story again? Are we back there again?
No, different. No. The only time there was bloodshed was against Kilshamah down at the pitch. And to be fair, it was an accident. It was I was going down the ball under the stand in Bala, and Sean Malley came in behind me, and he slipped. And to be fair, Sean, it was sound lad, but his knee caught the back of my head. And my father and his father were in the stands, and apparently they had a few bust-ups back in their day in the 70s and 80s. So I think we were fine on the pitch, but I think the two lads went at it in the stand nearly. So, yeah, good stuff. Fathers defending their son's honour.
I gave you very little chance of topping Edwin's story there, but you did.
Pulled one out of the bag.
I think we should put that one behind the paywall, Rob.
Yeah, you've got that for free, listeners, for free. All right, I barely have time to ask you this, but before we go to what we call the smoking room, which is for our any other business section, which is all especially for our Patreon members, for all the people out there who listen to our weekly podcast, I just give one question to finish, which is, what should they look out for, Stephen, this week against Monaghan? There might be signs of Mayo trying things a different way. So from what you've seen in the Dome to what you saw in the rain, is there anything at all there? You know, Michael Gallagher was told by James Horan to spot the difference and see what he can find. Is there anything there yet?
Yeah, well, there's one or two things that I sort of, like, I thought there was a willingness to look for that diagonal kick a couple of times. Now, I rewatched it, and there was only one or two of them that were kicked. I think Fionn's one early on was looking at. I think it's more born out of some of the runs that are being made inside when we get the ball in wide positions. And if that can be developed, I think that's going to be an important weapon. I think the setup defensively, I think, you know, we're looking at sort of five across the half back line. I would like to see that more zonal, because it lads, you know, chasing specific men over and back across the pitch. That will create gaps that we don't need. And, you know, our full back line certainly don't need either. So, yeah, a couple of different signs in terms of the setup defensively and looking at that kick. I'd like to see, you know, if we get a good day at the weekend, that moving a bit sharper and us trying that a bit more, because we certainly have the personnel inside now to get that kick off if we have a nice set play.
Edwin, you got about 30 seconds. Anything else to look for?
Yeah, I'm still intrigued by the midfield that started, and I was thinking in advance, what was the thinking and it wasn't a day for it, but I've also been thinking, is there a long game at play here? Like, and is he looking for that type of mobility over Heft at midfield? And maybe it mightn't be the two lads in question, but could it be like a Matty Ruan and an Oisin Mullen? And I just thought the last day, even in terms of our kickouts, we were looking for the space more often than not. And maybe it wasn't because we didn't have the Heft at midfield. Maybe it's because that's what Mayo are looking to do. They're looking to have that mobility at midfield, and it'll be a lot easier on other days. But even like you saw Dermot O'Connor picking up a couple of sprayers to the wing. So maybe there's something in that, but we'll have to wait and see. The body of evidence is quite light at the minute.
Right, lads, that's it. Thanks, Stephen.
Thank you, Rob. Really enjoyed it.
Thanks, Edwin.
I'm off to look for a box of Benson and Hedges, so no.
Yeah, exactly. If you don't smoke, it's okay. We still go out there anyways. We've talked about this. It's not very woke, but we're doing it anyways. Folks, we'll talk to you in a week. Thanks for listening. And in the meantime, if you want more audio, you know where to look. patreon.com/Mayo Podcast.